10 years ago today, a 51-day siege of the Branch Davidian compound near Waco, Texas, ended in an all-consuming fire that killed more than 80 people, including 22 children and the group's charismatic leader, David Koresh. In the years following, questions and conspiracy theories about what happened that day have swirled endlessly. Several years ago, a federal court found that the government was not responsible for the deaths at Waco. But for some people, all the investigations in the world will never provide a satisfying answer. NPR's Wade Goodwin covered the siege at Waco, as well as the subsequent trials and investigations. He joins us now for a look back. Thanks for being here, Wade.
It's my pleasure.
Wade, it all began on February 28, 1993, when agents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms raided that compound looking for weapons. Now, probably the first indication to the outside world that something was happening there was this phone call to 911. Let's listen to this.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Lieutenant Lynch. May I help you?
Yeah, there's 75 men around our building, and they're shooting at us in Mount Carmel.
Mount Carmel?
Yeah, tell them there are children and women in here and to call it off.
All right. Hello? I hear gunfire.
And so began the siege of Waco. Wade, what can you tell us about what happened that day?
That day was a big show for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. They had tipped off the local Waco newspaper and TV stations so that they'd get good coverage of this raid. And one of the TV stations, the cameramen got lost on their way out there that morning and stopped a mailman to ask directions to the compound. Unfortunately for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, that mailman happened to be the brother-in-law of David Koresh. And within minutes, that mailman had called the Branch Davidians and warned them that the ATF was on their way. And so the officers ran into an ambush.
And then 51 days later, Wade, on April 19th, 1993, so much has been said about what occurred on that day, what the FBI did or didn't do. What do we know about what really did occur?
The FBI had had enough of waiting for David Koresh to come out of there. There was division inside the FBI. The hostage negotiators thought that David Koresh was a psychopath, a true believer who really thought he was the Lamb of God, and that the Bureau better take very seriously these apocalyptic warnings and visions that David often talked about with them. But the tactical team, and they were the ones who were in charge of the operation, they thought David Koresh was a con man, a sociopath, and that the best way to end this con game was to put the screws to him and turn up the heat. And so that morning, they began to punch holes in the compound with Bradley fighting vehicles and insert tear gas in an attempt to drive them out.
And, of course, the most controversial part of that day, the fire that killed so many people and so many questions over the years about who set that fire.
Well, the surviving Branch Davidians have always maintained that it was the FBI's tanks that started that fire, or that they started it deliberately. But the FBI had listening devices inside the compound that they'd inserted during the siege. And you could hear, at one point, one of the Bradleys punched a huge hole that knocked down a major portion of the compound. And I think David Koresh and his lieutenants thought that the FBI was coming in right then, and you can hear Koresh yelling, "Start the fires." And fires quickly started at three or four different locations inside the compound. This is hotly disputed by the Branch Davidians, but I think most people will tell you that that David Koresh did start those fires.
Now, you spoke with some of the survivors of the siege not long afterwards. One of them, a man named David Thibodeau, told you what he went through that day. Let's listen to what he had to say.
I remember the tanks were getting cut. Pulling in more, a little closer, they came through the front door. People had their gas masks on. They were still reading the Bible through their gas mask. Phenomenal. And then I heard that there was a fire upstairs. Someone said, "There's a fire upstairs." You could hear the yelling from upstairs. I went into where David's room was. And when I opened up the curtain, this wall of flame, it was just literally a wall of flame, went shooting down the hallway. It was so hot. The smoke was pouring in. And I took the gas mask off because it didn't matter at that point anyway. I couldn't breathe. I took my coat off. I just went down on all fours, you know, and I was like hunched over. And I thought, this is it, you know. This is it.
Wade, what did David Thibodeau tell you about how that experience ultimately affected him?
Well, I mean, his wife died, all of his friends, his whole world kind of collapsed after that fire. He was one of nine people who made it out alive. They were deeply affected. No one really cared about the Branch Davidians. Most of Americans blamed the Davidians for the way things ended. The only people who embraced the Davidians were a few locals in Waco and the militia movement, who had always been wary of the ATF and thought the way the FBI handled the siege was abominable. And Thibodeau became very influenced by the militia groups who rallied around him, and it affected the way he saw things for a long time after. When I talked to him at the Brittany Hotel, that was before any of the militia groups had ever gotten to him. But in the years afterwards, he kind of became a different person than the one you just heard there, much more angry and much more forthright about the government being the reason that things all went up in flames.
And we now know, of course, that many people were apparently radicalized by Waco. What was its effect through the culture?
Well, I mean, a very big effect was that Timothy McVeigh, this young, recently discharged Army veteran, got extremely angry and began a plot to get revenge. And 2 years later, on April 19th, the same day that the compound burned to the ground, Timothy McVeigh took a Ryder rental truck packed with about 5,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate and blew up the Murrah Fedra building, killed 167 people. And so the events of that year still reverberate through the culture.
It seems as though we hear less and less about those very radical groups, the militia groups. We feel less threatened by domestic terrorism than perhaps by foreign terrorism. But is Waco still a touch point for some of these groups? Are they still out there? Are they still? Is their anger still fueled by the thought of what happened at Waco?
Yes. You go to gun shows, you will still see T-shirts. There's still banners about Waco. Waco is still a rallying cry for gun for gun advocates and for the militia. I have visited Waco in the subsequent to the fire, and it's become a tourist attraction, and it is a rallying point for the militia, and it's also kind of a place for reflection. People will come out and think about what happened and kind of shake their heads.
What do we know about the Branch Davidians? Are there any left? Are they? Is there a remnant of them anywhere?
Some are still around Waco. David Thibodeau wrote a book about Waco. I'm not sure where he is now. I know that there are some people who are still waiting for David to come back, and you know, that day cannot come soon enough for them.
NPR's Wade Goodwin. Thanks very much, Wade.
Oh, it's my pleasure.